ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello, and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I sit down with Dennis Ginas. Now, when I interviewed him before, he was with another club, and now he's with a new club. But his culture he brings with him, his philosophy as a coach, can really be seen with his two of his kids. One played D1 college soccer, and the other one played in the English Premier League. Now, if you do any time searching on Dennis, and if you'd spend time looking up his son, who played in the English Premier League, you learn very quickly that he's not a coach that, how do I describe it? It's holding expectation, holding players accountable for their actions and what he expects from them. And even more so from his own kids, and striving to set goals and striving to be the best players they can be. Before I give too much more away, let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I'm Dennis Ginas. I'm living in Texas now. From born in Nottingham, England. I was the third black player, or should I say black person, to achieve the English advanced licenses from the English FA, which was a great accomplishment back in the day. I coached. I was lucky enough to be coaching whilst I was still playing. So I've been involved with the professional scene with Nottingham Forest and Notts County. Back then, it was in and out with the reserves and trials here and there and with Bolton Wanderers. And so then I went into the non-league. My friend took me to a club called Grantham for, as a youth, and I started out in the semi-pro scene, Grantham Town, which was then the Northern Premier League, which is now, I think, the same league as what Wrexham, most people would Wrexham and Notts County played in last year to then promote to the professional ranks. So I did that with a few semi-pro teams, Shepshed, Charterhouse, and Nuneaton Borough. And so all that way, I've been coaching on the side. And then I had an opportunity to go and play in Finland. I was like, that was an interesting one because I was like, oh my God, that's a big jump. Do I really want to do this? But it was always my dream. And I was like, just running, I was just going back and forth here in England, still pushing to get into that first opportunity. But it was a very tough market to get to break into. Even though when I was playing, pretty much every league I played in, I always set myself as that. It was a weird goal I set myself. It was that I had to be the top goal scorer. I had to be the top goal scorer in the team, and I pushed it further and be like, I'd have to be the top goal scorer in the league. So if there were different divisions in that league, I had to be the top goal scorer overall. And that was born about, to be fair, more to do with the race culture back then. Because as a black person, you were never going to get the MVP. You know, it was just a given. You weren't going to get the MVP. But one thing I knew I could get was the top goal scorer because the numbers are numbers. And as much as you may not want to give me that, well, I've got 40, he's got 28. We can do the math. So it was that always drove me. That always drove me as a forward to do that, which also then we'll get into it. But that led me to how I was with my kids as well. Then I got the chance to go to play in Finland and I absolutely loved it. I first went to a team out there called, it was a Kappa, and they were a Division Two team. And at the time, for anybody that can look back at the Finnish players, there's not many top Finnish players that went on, but there was a player called Jari Litmanen, and he was probably their most famous player. I think he actually went on to play in Champions League. He may have been even with Barcelona at some point, Ajax for sure. Great player, great young player. And so it was one of those things where I was like, oh, you know, there's Jari. We got on pretty well. We're training together and stuff. And then for some reason, the board members were like, oh, now we're going to move you on. So I ended up getting moved on a, it was so crazy. It was like I was on a train overnight somewhere, meeting some people on another town. And we kind of hit it off. And I went and trained with them. They signed me. And so again, they won. There was a Division Three team called Kalsi, and we won the division for the first time in their history. And again, I had to be top goal scorer in the league and for the team as well there. So then I took over coaching them. I don't know, for some strange reason, the coach stepped down and they were looking for a coach. And I'm like, well, I've been coaching, I'll take it. So I ended up becoming the player coach for that team. And then did that for a bit, came back to England and became a player coach with some other semi-pro entities. And it was coming towards the end of my playing and was now trying to work out what I was going to do coaching wise. And I had the opportunity to be working at Nottingham Forest. Many people, for many years, Nottingham Forest at the time was, they were like one of the top teams in the it wasn't the Premier League then, I think it was Division One. But they'd won Europe back to back, and they'd won the division. You know, they were a top club, and so I got the opportunity to be working their academy because the academies had just started in Europe some years ago, I think 80 something. And so, yeah, just before Jermaine, and that was 83. So around 80, the academies came out, and so I got to work there. And was able to work with Jermaine, my son, Jermaine Tinas. And so that's where that story began.
Right.
So he was playing with a club, same as I'd started out as a kid. It was called Clifton All Whites, and it was a great youth organization. Nothing huge, but it was just a great little setup. They had two lovely fields, and they were a sparkling white kit. It just looked the part. And I played there, and then he ended up going there as a young kid. And then I think he was 6 or 7. He was playing, and one day a scout came and said that they'd like him to come to the to join their academy, and at Forest, come and train. And we're like, okay, let's go check it out. And so, before you knew it, he'd left his club team and was now playing for Nottingham Forest in the academy. I think this was 8 or 9. So he was no longer playing with his club team; he was playing with the Forest youth in their academy, and that's where it all began for him. And so we had a team. I think they went 3 years in the academy unbeaten.
Wow.
3 years. It
3 years is a
was.
long time.
But the system, the system in the academies is pretty ruthless. It's a pretty ruthless system, and it's a very tough because with Jermaine's team, most of those, maybe one other kid made it out of his age group. And I mean, the setup is brilliant, and these were good players, but probably maybe one other kid made it out of his age group. There were some kids. There was someone not. Jermaine Pennant, who was playing at Notts County, and he went to Arsenal. And he was a big time player. He played for Liverpool too, Jermaine Pennant. And I think Dawson, that played for Spurs, the central defender. And every year they would evaluate the players and they would say yes or no. And so players, it was different to how it was more ruthless there compared to the setup in America. Where you can go to tryouts and get cut. You were getting cut from what you class as really your dream because you'd think you'd made it at that age. And you were getting cut at the end of the year if you weren't up to it. So you had to be mentally tough, and you were like a young professional,
I'm
nine,
what?
ten.
9, 10, okay.
Parents weren't allowed to come to the games unless they drove themselves. They were not allowed on the buses. They couldn't come near the kids when they were training. They couldn't come near the kids when they were playing. And so their parents would drop them, drop us, so they'd get dropped off in the parking lot, and the bus would take off, and it could be going to London or whatever. And off you go. And if the parents wanted to watch the game, they would have to drive their own way there and drive back. The only way you could get to bring your kid back is if you'd have to get special permission after the game from the coach. It literally was like, you're not coming near your kids. We're dealing with them. Off you go. So, fortunately for me, though, I'm the coach. So, I kind of mentioned to you before that there's the difference of raising an athlete like that is I was fortunate because I was the coach. And again, as a young black player and coach at the time, I had to go and get that coaching license because at that point it allowed me to then be like, well, I have the same license as you.
Right.
Whatever the highest license is, I have it. So at that point, it was like you couldn't say anything to me. All those other issues that you may want to bring up, like, well, you're not really that qualified. Well, yes, I am. So with that, I was then able to, I felt confident enough in what I was doing. I was loving what I was doing with him. But I was there and he was my son. So I wasn't one of those parents that was having to drive to watch him. Do you know what I mean? So I was able to really have a hands-on approach with him, coaching and soccer and all those things. And he probably, well, it did happen. He got it on the way to the game. He got it on the bus. He got it after the game on the bus home. And then he got it on the way back home. And
so
then
once
we
you walked
go
to the front door, it was done, like no more talk, or did it continue on?
Well, the funny thing about it was, we just took, we were always on about football. He was into it. He was so into it. In fact, he was like, he would wear me out. Like, let's go in the yard. Let's go in the yard. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, when are you going to stop? And so he was just a fanatic for it. So, and then all we would do, I would go over his game with him. Even if he'd gone out and scored so many goals, as he thought he'd done great. And I'd be like, well, what about those three that you missed? You know, and we'd talk about, you said, I scored five. Yeah, but you should have scored eight. You know, you should have scored eight. And it's like, but we got to the point where he'd be like, yeah, yeah, I know that one and this one. So that's when I was like, okay, we're good. You're getting it. So we ended up staying, and they kept keeping him on. And then I ended up, I think he was 13. And I think that's about when I was moving to come to America to coach. And that was a tough one, obviously for personal reasons. But at them days, the academy, the coaches were not really being given the opportunities to go up the ladder to coach. Look, because my dream after I wasn't playing was to be a coach of a professional club. And so, but then what they were doing was they would then take ex-players and just give them the positions. And so ex-players were given these opportunities. And so at that point, I was like, well, I can't survive on doing nothing. So if that's the route that you guys are going, and it was, then I had an opportunity to come to America. Saw because I was leaving him behind, but he was set. And so then I came over here and started coaching. But I was coaching him. He actually then got taken on full time, I think around 15, made his debut at 16 at Forest. But the journey was not an easy one. It was we had a lot of battles. I mean, there were times when, you know, he'd cry, you know, he'd be crying, and his mom would be like, leave him alone. And I'm like, he's got two choices. He said he wants to be a professional. So if he doesn't, then cool, I won't bother him anymore. But if you still do, which I would always say to him, is that what you still want to do? And he'd say, yes. I says, okay, then, well, let's get back into the conversation. Do you know what I mean? Let's quit the crying and let's work this out. So it was always, I was always going to be tough with him while ever he said it was what he wanted to do. Because I knew what it was. I knew what was required. It was, once you've been around it and yourself, you know, you had to go to that next level of performance. So he was playing in the midfield when I first started working with him. Well, actually, when he was a young kid, he was a striker. And he showed this real knack of, he could just finish with such composure. It was, even at 6 years old, he was playing in a tournament in Botlands, and he was 6 years old playing with 9-year-olds. Wow. And he would go through, and he would just, I call it the Thierry Henry finishes, because he would just go through and he'd just curl it into the corner. And it was just this natural, and I was like, oh my gosh, you've got this natural knack for finishing. And so I was like, okay. But then when he went to Forest, he played in midfield. And he was like, and I said, well, the thing with that is that you're not that big yet. So he wasn't very big as a youngster. And so you could see in some of these games, he was physically getting challenged,
right,
in the academy. So I said, okay, let's just go back to centre mid. He's like, nah. I says, nah. I says, yeah. I says, it'd be good for you because we'll get you fitter. You got to play. You got to be up and down. So you're going to get fitter. You got to be stronger. I says, but you also have the vision, because he had great vision too. You could always see a pass and make a pass. I says, so you had that to your game, and we know you can finish. We already know that. So let's add this to that. And so we ended up playing midfield. He wasn't very happy at first, but stayed there and pretty much ended up playing his whole career for England and for Tottenham and Newcastle and Forest and Villa and QPR as a centre midfield player and scoring goals here and there. So, and I would call him, I'd watch him play and I'd call him, I'd say, hey, you got to score that. He'd be like, what? I'm like, no, you got to score that. No, he says, yeah, no. And he was really good again because he'd be like, yeah, because he didn't turn, he never kind of turned and was like, Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. He never, once he'd gone on to that next realm of Premier League and financial wealth, he didn't turn around and have that arrogance and go, no, Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. And he'd be like, sometimes he might say, yeah, but the coach is trying to get me to play here. And I'm like, I don't care. Then you just got to get there and get back to where you're supposed to be. I said, but if you finish that, guess what? Coach is not going to stress you.
That's the thing I've been told. It's like you have to be a little selfish to be successful in order to gain the trust of the coach.
Yes. And so, and we've gone through that. We've been through that journey of the tears and I'm trying to as naturally say, leave him alone or give him a break. But I also, I mean, it wasn't always tough, tough, tough luck, but it was like, it was tough love when it was needed. And it was like very straight, like I wasn't fluffing things up. That's not good enough. You need to do that. And this is what you could have done here to change that. Because sometimes, you know, we get at that point, as you said, as you get a bit older, it'd be like, yeah, but this player was doing, I said, this player was going to do this. And I said, you can't have that. You can't be saying, I didn't do that because this player's going to do that. You need to do it and dictate what that player is going to do. But you're trying to play that player's game, then you miss your opportunity. You got to play your game. So it was an interesting contrast that he would have to take in. It was like, well, you already know what you think he's going to do, so this should be easier for you. So if he's going to do that, if you're going to shoot, you know he's going to stick his leg out. So fake that shot and let's move it. Don't be hitting it into his leg and everybody going, great tackle, well done. No. That's not well done. You've got to know that. And so it was like, okay, okay. So as a kid, he went through, he actually loved it. So that was the beauty. He literally loved it and he hated it, dreamt it, slept it, watched it, talked it. He came, so he was watching me when I was playing. All my life, pretty much in England, he came as a little kid and was always at my games. So, for me, I say that, like I said before, as the coach and as the qualified coach, licensed coach, it's totally different to other parents. I can't imagine, to be fair, because I'll go into my daughter in a bit. I can't imagine how parents who may have some idea of soccer, how they have to deal with coaches coaching their kids. Because I couldn't cope with a coach coaching my kid. I just know I couldn't because I didn't. You know, so because even when he was playing professional, I would still call him and say, what is that? But the coach says, well, no. I says, I'm not worried about what the coach says. That's what you should have been doing. If the coach says you've got to be back here doing this, then you better get up there and get back. So you got to get fitter. It was like, yeah, I'm not telling you not to do it, but then you've got to get back. So you just got to be fitter or you got to finish it. But so we would have those conversations, but it was because of my own experience and qualifications, it made it easier for me because I was able to like highlight things that he needed to do as a youngster. In terms of the commitment, in terms of it, all right, at one point they were like, there's no more sodas, there's no more junk food. Are you going to commit to this? And I looked at him and he was like, yeah. And I went, are you sure? And he went, yeah. I says, okay. So, and that was at 9, 10 years old. And so that journey was a long one, but in the end, you know, he ended up having an absolutely world-class, no pun, playing in the World Cups and stuff, career, you know, and we look back and when he was at school playing and he was just a natural. As a youth coming through, he was a natural. He just stood out. as a natural. And it wasn't, again, I don't recall ever having to really push him to say, hey, we got to go and run. We have to go and do this. It was pretty much, he did a lot of the driving. He did a lot of that. Let's go outside. Let's go and do this. I want to go and do this. And I'm like, really? But again, I would say, okay, that's what you said. You said you wanted him to play, so let's go. So off we would go. So a lot of it was just in the yard doing things that you probably wouldn't get to do at practice, maybe. But I knew what it was, and it's hard to explain this to people, but it's like I knew exactly because I was coaching, been coaching at a professional level. I'd coached camps and academies and things like that. I was coaching in that professional club, knowing what they were looking for. I had the curriculum. So when I would, if I'm playing with him, I had all this inside information in reality because I was the coach. Whereas most parents, sadly, are on the sideline going, hey, run, come on, do this, or come on, do that. And then they get home, and it's like, if their kid is showing some signs of wanting to go to the next level, the dilemma that they have here in America is it too much? Have I started it too early? Have I started it too late? Which was a lot of the arguments or discussions that were always out there. And this is another good one. I remember starting with Jermaine when he was 3 years old. People were like, what? I says, yeah, I remember being in my garden with him. And we were sitting, I was basically on my knees and we were playing head tennis. And it was, well, not head tennis. We were juggling the ball, heading it back and forth to each other. And we would get a few in. And I'm like, oh my God, this kid is ridiculous. I mean, I'd probably get lynched now because you're not supposed to head the ball until you're 30.
It's depending on what parent you talk to. My wife and I have the conversation about headers. It should be teaching it at 6, 1 or 2 a week, teaching them how to properly strike the ball so they know, yes, by the time they can head the ball, they, yes, aren't getting injured. I mean, they say what? No more than 25, I think it is, at a college level a week in training, yeah, headers. Yeah. And so if you start teaching them at a young age, less likely for head injuries headers.
That is my argument still to this day, because I'm not going – all of it's hilarious because you're going to go, you're not allowed to head the ball. You're not allowed to head the ball. And at 13, you put them on a field and you go, head it. They're going to be like, what? What is this thing coming towards my head? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm going, everything is in moderation. The way I see it, you know, you want the kids to be fit, you run them, but it's got to be within moderation. But if you don't, you got to teach that child the correct technique of how to head the ball. They can work it with a soft sponge ball, yes, to teach them the technique. So they understand, like, if you don't keep your eyes on the ball as you go to head it and it hits you on the nose, that's where you get your watery eyes. If you just close your eyes and put your head in there and it hits you in the middle of your head where that little dimple is, that's going to hurt you and you're going to see stars. So you've got to teach them the correct way so they don't hurt their necks and their eyes and end up with seeing stars. So again, at a young age, I believe that teaching him things, I taught him things at a young age until he couldn't do it. And that's when I would know that was too much. But there wasn't much that I would show him that he couldn't do. So people now will go, oh, don't do that. They're too young. I'm like, well, how do you know?
I totally agree with that. I have my 5-year-old daughter and her soccer team. They've been playing a diamond formation for about a year. So you're talking, they were 4 when they started playing a diamond formation on the, yeah, soccer field. And let me tell you, there are leaps and bounds ahead of every team that they play against in learning how to play in a formation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if they lose right now. You can't beat, yeah, the herd of 4 kids running down the field with the ball. I'm sorry. There's no way, yeah, of beating that if you're teaching formations. But, yeah, when they go 7v7, yes, and 3-4 years, when they go 8, when they turn 8 in 3 years, they're going to be ahead of the game. And that's it. That's my whole thing. It's like, if they understand it now and they, yep, progress through it, like you're saying, it's like you said it very well. It's, you did it until he was too tired pretty much of doing it.
Yes. It's because people have asked me this before and I've gone, I never learned anything in my coaching without taking it back to him. And I go, hey, I've got something for you. Try this. Try this. And he would, sometimes I'd be like, oh my God, he just went into that. It was really like, there were some moves I'd be like, I was at a camp or then I'd be like, hey, try this. And he would just go, huh? And he'd just go and do it. 3, 4 years old, boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, okay. But then like I said, back into the coaching thing, my expectations, and I think, and I actually coach this way with all kids, because the thing for him was, he was my son. So the expectation for him was higher than anybody else. He was higher than anybody else. Somebody could miss that shot. And I'd be like, hey, unlucky, next time, let's go. If it was him, I'd be like, hey, you need to finish that. And it was, but he was my son, so I could talk to him that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, this was my expectation. So I wasn't going to lay my that ultimate level onto that child, because they may not be able to take it. I knew what he could deal with. He knew, and I knew. So my understanding of what I was teaching them, even that group, they were young, that team, and they were young, but my demands on them was really high. And bear in mind, they had a, they never asked you if you won or not in the academy ages. They never asked you what the score was. They always asked you, how did they do on the topic you were working on last week? So if it was passing and stuff, passing and movement, they literally would go, how did they do with their passing and movement? And never asked you what the score was. It wasn't a league. It was a true development academy of all the professional clubs, and they were all on the same page. Some of them had better academies with young kids, but they literally had that same page, and they had a curriculum. And this curriculum was for all different ages. And it was like, you couldn't, you had to do, you were doing passing pretty much. If it was a school term, you were doing passing. And then they might move to something else the next term. There was no deviating. Oh, your finishing last week was terrible. We're going to go into finishing today. There was none of that. It was like, this is what we're doing, page three, this level of passing now. Then come Monday morning when you met with a big boss and he wanted feedback on how the team did, that's what they gave you. Well, the difference here is people talk about those concepts and the results not mattering. Sadly, they do. Sadly, they do, because they determine the success of a club. They determine if you can play in that ECNL league or not. So somewhere along the line, no matter what you're saying, the results do matter, because people will leave and go to another club because that other club's beaten them. And so you're starting again. It's very, the funny thing about youth soccer here is very much like the professional coaches today. Like the professional coaches in the game, if they don't get results, they're fired, they're out.
Right.
Well, youth coaching, there's this silence there, and it's like, oh, we're not worried about the results. Oh, we're not worried about that. But like 95% of people are not going to be able to sit there and watch their child lose every week for a season. And when I say a season, I'm not even talking a whole year. I'm talking for a full season, lose every game, and then go, okay, I'm going to sign up again in the spring. Most of them in those ages are going, no, I'm not doing that. I need to get my child here. So they start to already look at other teams, and before you know it, they've jumped ship. And sadly, they now have to, parents don't realize this now, now they're going to take a whole season adjusting, being comfortable with friends and the surroundings. So now that's a whole season just trying to be comfortable with people you don't even really know. And at the end of the day, you're still not going to win the World Cup at 8 years old.
We're so, only talking 8. We aren't talking 13 yet even.
Yeah. So it is a sad case. And so when people talk about academies over here to me and development, I look at them as well and say, yeah, well, I think you guys use the word development because it sounds trendy. I don't, because you're not doing a true development, because you keep score.
Yes.
If you keep score, it's competitive. I don't care what you say about rec. If you're keeping score, it's competitive. Because now I know I've just given up a goal. I mean, some kids don't even know what score it is, but I just gave up a goal. If I haven't scored yet, I know I'm losing. So your parents even more so know this. So whenever you're keeping score, you are now, you can't talk about development because the score matters. Because kids will clock onto it. They can do math, most of them. You know, so that's the difference, I think, in Europe with their academies. Over here, they haven't developed to that point yet, but there is a difference. And I think sometimes people need to just be honest about what is really going on to move forward. I just think there's a lot of pretending about, like I said, using the word development, and my club can do this because it's ECNL, and so they have an attitude where those grassroots clubs who are doing the right things, they end up now just having to give in and have their groups get swallowed under an umbrella. And I don't, sometimes that might work out, but then other times, then those teams eventually in that big organization will be picked off by their other teams individually. Some of those players get picked off. Because again, it's a natural process. If you've come there because it's an ECNL or MPL, whatever, opportunity because they're under their umbrella. Well, common sense says if you've got a team here with three outstanding players that are going to make that team you've just joined under their umbrella, that team way better, they're going to want them. And those three are going to want to go there. It's a natural process. It's just like, it's a harsh reality to face, but that you might get away with it for a year, but it's going to change. It is going to change. And if you're doing it right, it has to change. This is where it all falls in. If you're doing it right, it has to change, because that is part of development too. That you three would be much better here with this team, because yes, they're the top players, you would fit right in there. Yeah, that's where you should be. And then maybe the lower three of that group might fit better here, still be competitive, but now you've now created this team here that's now in a situation where there's every likelihood that they could go on and win regionals and compete for nationals,
right?
If you're doing it correctly. And that should be, and we know, well, Seoul has already proven that that's what they win nationals and stuff, so they're not going to suddenly change that. And again, there's nothing wrong with those conversations. There's nothing wrong with those conversations, because we have them supposedly at lower levels. We have them at lower levels. This is where I think this would be you should be able to say to somebody, I think this is the best fit for your child.
That is the conversation I've been having a lot lately, is how do we get these coaches to put aside their ego for player development? Because at the end of the day, Richard Smith said, and I always say Kevin because he always has it, Richard Kevin Smith. Richard said to me is that FC Dallas is the top club in the Metroplex. We can't argue with that on the boys' side.
Right.
And players should be wanting to go play for them so they can go compete at the MLS next level.
Right.
But everything else below that should be local still, because that is truly the competition here, but they have everyone in every league within their academy still. And right. But at the same time, it's a coach should be willing to take on a player like, this is a better fit for you to be on my team, and you're going to be a better fit on with this coach. And it's, how do you create that open dialogue? And not so much to create like a commodity of players, but you also have to support, like, the biggest pet peeve I hear from every coach I've ever talked to is, and nothing against FC Dallas, I'm not trying to knock them, but they will go get players because they're FC Dallas and they can go play at the MLS next level. And they're the only club now in the Metroplex that can, I guess Dallas Hornets, but that's a different story, but large club.
Yeah.
And they can get players to come to them for that. And how do these smaller clubs get credit for what development they did for that player? Because you don't see, when they put their tag on them, FC Dallas does, you don't see Solar or Coach So-and-so with ABC club gets the credit. It is always just the big last club they touched. And I think that would help draw.
But I think that what you're just saying there is the problem that the whole of America has. And that is why the American national team runs into those issues also, in terms of they pick up a team. Like right now, they've got a squad that's pretty young and they've got a lot of high hopes for them. But then when this squad is kind of like, wanes off, it's like, where does the next group come from? This country has got this, everything's so expensive to play.
Yes.
And they have a snobbery. They have a snobbery and they tie, this is the truth. They have a snobbery and a clique. And it's very clicky. If they were doing things really right in this country, with their soccer and development and moving players, they would have a scouting system. As well as, that's what's wrong with this country. They would have a scouting system in place. That, so, all right, North Texas, they may have three scouts that deal with MLS teams. Or just Dallas alone. I have two scouts for Dallas.
Right.
And they go out and watch youth teams. You should be able to say to somebody, hey, I went out to watch your team the other day. You were North Texas United, and I want to invite that player to come and train with us. What do they think? Really think that only FC Dallas produces young players?
No.
Well, this is the problem, because you go to California, they're going to go surf. It's going to be surf. It's going to be these big clubs in these states that they are all clicky. They're all connected with whoever they're connected to, and we only really want to have your players come into this environment, and you're the only one that can bring them in because you guys can afford to. Well, it's a lazy way. It's a lazy way, and they're not interested in that street kid. They're not interested in that street kid. So when people talk about how kids can get the opportunity to get on and get on, they're not given it. A lot of kids aren't given it because nobody's out there really doing the work on a neutral, non-judgmental level. It's if you're not playing for that club, that top team, FC Dallas or Sola, they class you as nobody.
Yes.
And the system lends itself to that all the way through, because they don't pick up. I think I mentioned to these two one time before about the last time I heard a story like that was Mia Hamm, where she was in a park just playing, supposedly. Some guy saw her, went out there, watched her, and then she was invited into some camp. I can't. The soccer association here, women and men, I would love for them to highlight how many players they've invited into a camp from just going out to watch a regular game, not watching one of the top clubs. And I guarantee you they would struggle to come up with 20 of them around the country.
I think you're giving them a lot of credit for getting 20. I don't think they could probably get three.
See?
But that's the thing. That's where the whole conversation with ODP comes from. But ODP is $500-$600 just to get into it. You can't even try out for ODP until you drop $600. I was looking at the cost because my son asked me what ODP was one day. Like, someone at his practice has an ODP shirt. And I'm like, you can't get into it without paying $600. Well, someone has to pay for it. And I go, yeah, whoever runs it is making $600 a kid. They invite out 400 or 500 kids for every age group at $600 a pop. That is a lot of money very quickly. Yeah. And how many of them do they keep? 20, 25, maybe 30? Max.
Well, again, they have no interest in creating a program that is sustainable. You could sell that if you actually was using that as your rationale. We want this to be sustainable, and the fees are this because we want to be able to turn this program into one where it's basically virtually free. I'm not saying it has to be totally free, because I think sometimes having to make a financial commitment is also a way of showing your commitment.
Right, but you have to have some skin in the game as family.
Something, yeah. So, but they could just definitely. They could put money aside to allow kids the opportunity that cannot afford it. But it's something that if it's already been created now, this monster's already been created. It's young kids out there now, if they're not in that, how would you put it? If they're not in that society, the higher echelons of soccer, those big clubs, if you're not in that group, then nobody's looking at you. I should be able to call somebody and say, hey, I've got these three kids here. You should invite them into your camp. You know what they say to me is like, who are they? And then who are you? And I could turn to them and say, who am I? No, let's not go down that road. I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. And I'm telling you, you should have a look at these kids. For me, people go, all right, so I've got these three kids. And people will go, well, I'm not really sure if they'd really be up to it. I'm like, well, until you put them with those top players, until you put them with them, you coming to just watch them here is going to do no good. They have to come and train, because if you train with better players, you become better. And you're not giving them the opportunity. You are not giving them the opportunity because you think John Smith, who's been with us for the last 2 years, he wasn't available for the training camp, but we're still going to pick him because he came to Puerto Rico with us last year. Well, he's not here. He's not here, and this kid's here. Yeah, well, no, because I've done this. I was working for the region in Region 4, and the way they separated the teams, which was hilarious, they kind of picked all these previous national team players to play against this group, which I ended up with, and they're all like, oh, I don't want to play them. Why would we play them? And they had all these bright white kits, and I just said, listen, this is what we're doing. We're going to kick their butts. It's just like, don't start that with me. So we just packed it in, frustrated them. They didn't know what to do. Because I said, they're going to just pass it around and think they look pretty, and that's fine. Let them do it. Just watch them in front of you. And in the end, we got a breakaway, and we got a goal. We won 1-0. It was like, oh, my God. So then in the evening, this was the regional staff, started talking about players in the squad. And there were a couple of kids off that team that deserved the opportunity to go with the squad. Oh, no, we can't, because we already have these three kids. I'm like, where are they? Or they couldn't make it to the camp. I'm like, well, so what? I'm supposed to think that they're good enough when I haven't seen them? Well, it's just like, it is how it is. So the click kicked in. Those other kids didn't get the opportunity because they're already set with what they're going to take. It's the old boys act, as we call it. Old school, you know, it's like, we're going to, yeah, these are our boys. We're going to take them. These are our girls. We're going to keep them. And that's how they operate.
And that's why you go back what you said. Our system will never develop here because it's not a true competitive market, because you take those three boys that had the chance to go play and beat the other team, and then they have these three players that didn't show up. Well, how do you know they aren't better than them? They never competed against each other. That you don't have stats with them playing against each other.
Right.
And this is what's wrong, is that someone told me with the ODP is that they already have their ODP age group. They've already selected. And they're going to bring in, let's say they already have 20 girls from the last team still there. They're going to bring in 20 new kids, but they aren't making those prior 20 kids have to compete for their spot again. It's like, how do you know they're still at the same top level as the year before? Because I'll use FC Dallas, because that's the largest club here, and that names that are more recognizable. I'll use Nolan Norris. I interviewed him. But the point that they talk about him a lot is that he's not done maturing. He's only 18 years old, going to be 19 here soon in about 5-6 months. And he's not done maturing. But how do you know what type of player he's going to be in 5 months? Is he still going to progress? I mean, that's where his trajectory is going. That's where all of his stats are going. But yeah, is he still going to be sharp and strong as the next person?
Well, again, I'll go back to my son. When I saw him, I said, he's going to make it. But I remember saying, when I say it's about players, I say, definitely got it. Now it's going to come down to a choice. It comes down to a choice now. Are they going to be willing to commit to it? Or are they going to basically, or will they lose interest in it? Those areas are now out of my control. That's how it was with him. I knew he had it. I just, at that point, that then I was thinking, now this is all about him. Is he going to want to continue to be committed to it without me pushing him anymore? Are you going to want to commit to it yourself and do the work? Or are you going to still love it? Because those are the areas that as parents you have no control over. No matter what you think, you have no control over those two areas if they're going to want to commit to it. So the blessing for me was that he went all the way through and played it. You know, like I said, he's Forest as a captain at 16, went to Newcastle and was one of the two top most expensive transfers at the time with the coach then. I forget it, Bobby Robson, bless, rest his soul. Bobby Robson, he coached Ronaldo, not Cristiano Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo. He was a teenager and he was 5 million. And then he bought Jermaine as a teenager for 5 million back then. And so they were the two most expensive transfers. But he went through it and he stuck it all the way, all those years. And then I moved to America, my life changes, and I have my daughter, Alexa. So now my story is a totally different one because I'm in a totally different country and it's a totally different mentality. And everything is different. Everything about it now is different because one, female too. It wasn't, the women were still the strongest nation then by a mile, but it wasn't really that major in the women's game. So she, I have two girls, and of the two, she was the youngest and she didn't want to play. And I was like, oh, and I was doing this Kicking Cubs Academy for, you know, 3 to 5 year olds. People would be like, what? I said, yeah. But the parents would be involved. I have the parents involved in it. So it wasn't just they'd drop the kids off. And she would just come and she'd run around. And I'm like going, I'd go home and I'd say to my wife, like, she's the better athlete of the two. I wish she would play. And we'd say to her, why don't you go and play? And she'd just go out and watch her sister play. And all she would do on the sideline was critique her sister. Don't let her push you. Don't do that. Don't do this. And we would just say, well, shut up. If you want to play, go play. And she'd say, no. And she'd just tell her and tell her and tell her. And I'm not lying. It was like, I was like, oh my God, this kid is crazy. And then one day she just turned to us. I think she was 5, maybe 6. And she just turned to us and went, okay, I want to play soccer now. And I'm like, what? I want to play soccer now. And we're like, all right then. So we got a team together. And she started to just show those exact same traits as Jermaine did. She was a natural goal scorer. Out of nowhere, she was just a natural goal scorer. And so I was like, all right, okay. And she would literally go out and score 4 and 5 and 6. She was just on it. And then a couple of years down the road, and again, I was involved. I wasn't coaching her fully, but she was in my club. So I kind of had a hand on who was coaching her. You know what I mean? Right. But like, hey, you're coaching my daughter, and I'll be at the game. So let's get this right. Let's not be sloppy. And a couple of years later, she was like, oh, yeah, I want to play professional. Now, I'm not sure if that's because her brother was playing, and she knew, and she'd been to England and watched him play and stuff like that. So I'm not sure she was influenced by that. So she's like, yeah, I want to be a professional. And I'm like, are you sure? So now that conversation now is, it's right in my face. It's not in a professional club. It's right there. But I didn't really coach her, like I say, but I was hands-on with what she was doing. And I was always demanding of her also in terms of scoring and playing. And she was special because she was a natural goal. I still say it to her to this day. She's a natural goal scorer. And I used to call her Mia Hamm. So you like a little Mia Hamm. Because in the women's game, again, my coaching, it was easier to spot that true potential in the women's game back then. It was way easier because you had a marker. the US women were a marker. And some of those traits have now come, it's so funny because some of those traits that I was identifying are now coming to hit the US women, but that's another story. And so she was a natural goal scorer. So I'm like, listen, score, score, score. But then again, over here now, it was people were complaining, why didn't you take her off? She scored 6. And I'm like, no, she needs to go and score 10. What do you mean take her off? I'm not going to penalize her because she's scoring goals.
Right.
Put her in defense. No, she's not a defender. I've got defenders. So I'm going to go all the way with that. People will be like, well, why don't you play up? I'm like, why would I want to play up? I want her and I want these girls, because it was a really, really another great young girls team. I want these girls to have success in their age group, that they are able to execute the things that they've been working on, rather than when they do great and they're playing up, some girl who's a foot taller and stronger suddenly runs back and takes the ball off them, not because they're better, just because they're physically stronger. So they don't get the benefits of the success from the work that they've been doing. So people would be on my case with this team for a year or two. I'm like, no, we're not playing up. I want her to keep playing and I want her to keep scoring. I want her to keep getting her confidence and knowing how to score. And she would get grief again. I'm like, you scored 5. You should have scored 8. But she was different because she would get on my, she would give it back to me like, rah, 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 dad, whatever, whatever. And she would cry. And mom now, she'd be like, leave her alone. And then she'd take her and off they'd go. And I'd be like, same thing. But I'd be like, you still want to be professional? Yeah. I says, well, stop it then. I'm not having it. If you don't, then tell me and I'll leave you be. But whatever you say, that's what you want to do. This is my expectations. That's it. So she went on and she just kept tearing it up. And she got older. And then, you know, this is another interesting part here, because it goes back to these big clubs and all that. Well, she played for a varsity team as a freshman and was a top goal scorer and all those kind of things in college, in high school as well, won state. So she had this about her, and she wanted to win the McDonald's athlete award so badly, and she should have done. Gatorade. And I was like, she was just tearing it up, and it broke her when she didn't. And I just said to her, I said, look, because again, there's some political little things, where you're at, and da, 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 we're in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and so. She didn't win it, but she was close, but she didn't win it. And I was like, hey, you got to go bust the gut harder now, haven't we? So she comes through, she's playing club. And now at this point, it's a different conversation. The goal is not professional so much, because there's a stage before that here. The goal is college. Can we play in college? So now everybody, all these clubs now, what they're selling is, we can get you to play in college. We can get you to play D1, we can get you to play this, and we can get you to play that. So the sales pitch for these big clubs and to recruit players was always that. It was ECNL was just about coming in at that point. So in the end, she would go to Phoenix to play play in the ECNL. Because my club wasn't, again, a similar thing. My club, Elite FC, didn't have that stature where they would allow you to be in the ECNL, even though our team was state champions, your club's not got the stature, so you can't come in. So it was like, okay, so I would drive her to Phoenix to go and play in the ECNL in their national championships with this Phoenix team, and which was ridiculous. And so she goes there, and I'll never forget it. She plays in this game and she's acting all shy, and I'm like, let's go. And then she misses these chances. And I'm like thinking, okay, you're getting up there now. This is enough of this has got to stop. Are you serious? It's college scouts here. You score those goals. Guess what? You're getting into a school. You're getting a scholarship. If you score those, you're in, because they're going to look at you and go, oh, did you see that? And so she misses them. And I'm like, So we get in the car and we're driving to go and get something to eat. And I pour over, and I'm just like going, I turn to her and I says, "Hey, do you really want to do this?" And she's like, "Yeah, why?" I says, "Because I'm not having that. I am not having that. What you just done out there, I'm not having it. I'm not driving all the way to wherever we were. We were in Chicago at the time. And you're going to just come out here and act as though you've never played soccer before and you've got these chances to score and you don't want to take them. So if you're not interested, we can go home." That was the heart to heart we had on the trip. I'm like, "I'm not having it. We can go home."
What age so was make this choice.
So, huh?
What age was this roughly?
What old was she then? About 15? 14, 15.
Thank you.
Right? So she actually held it down pretty well. And she was like, no. Okay. I'm like, okay. So we finished up. She played well in the end and we left. They didn't win it. I think they got to the semifinals. And so we came back home. We're back at the grind again. And now she's coming to college showcases. So again, our team supposedly is not really up to it. And everybody's offering her in the big clubs, "Oh, your daughter should come and play for us because she can get into ECNL. We can get her into a college program here and there." So we purchased a college recruiting package. But it was a pretty good one, to be fair. We filled our information and sent them videos and pictures and, or you know, her playing background and stuff like that, and then they would try and place her into schools. And so we went on some visits, and then we started to get into it more about, well, do you want a big school or a small school? Because not every school fits. And then the understanding of what Division One, Two, and Three were in NAI schools, because people would just say Division One, but getting to Division One, which again was very dismissive of Division Twos and Division Three schools, because those Division Twos and Threes may be a better fit for your child, you know, and they can still pay for your child's education. So we kind of went through it all, and the conversations became different in the sense of, look, it's all about where you're going to be comfortable. But if you're going to, and I had this conversation with all the players I was working with, if you're going to continue playing soccer and your plan is to go to school, then you should be looking at a school that can help your parents offset those costs, because you're going to play soccer anyway. So if it's Division Two or Three, you've achieved your goal. If it's NAI, you can progress from NAI to a Division Three or Two after the first year. But if you're going to play and you're going to go to school to get your education, further education, then let's take advantage of it. Let's not just look at this as Division One. Well, now it comes down to tournaments and showcases. And can you, your club won't get into this. And they literally, these tournaments were doing this. They were like, "Well, your club, no, you don't get into this tournament." I'm like, "What? No, sorry. We have Surf here. We have FC Dallas. We have the Tech." And they were like, "No, your club can't come in." It was crazy. We're like, "What?" So, again, the next opportunity was a friend of mine, Kevin. He was at one of the big clubs, Rush. And then Rush grew because they merged all over the country with everybody. They weren't big in Albuquerque, but they're a big organization. So if your name was Rush, you were in, whether you were good or not. So Kevin was like, "Hey, we're going to this tournament in California. Can Alexa come and be a guest player?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure. Alexa, you want to go?" She went, "Yeah." So she went, and she's kind of a bit shy. And so we played she was coming off an injury. She'd done a knee. She'd done a knee in high school. And we're like, "Okay, let's see how we're going to do here." But it was like, that was the year now. It was like, "You've got to go, either going to go." Because I always told her, I says, "I ain't paying you for you to go to school. That's not where I come from." So you got two choices. You better be a footballer, a baller, because I ain't paying for you. I'm not paying that money for you to go to school. That's ridiculous. And so she ended up playing the first game in the showcase. And she, again, did the similar thing to what she did in that ECNL thing. And I'm like, she missed these chances. And we get in the car again, and I'm talking to her mom, and I'm like, you would not believe it. She could have had a hat trick, and all these coaches are here. So we get in the car, and I said, listen, this is it. You have to deliver. You it's a showcase here. Come on. It's up to you now. It's all in your feet. You got to do this. You know? So it was a knee that was, I think she wasn't confident about it. So it was like, okay. So she comes to the second game. And before you know it, she goes out there and it's like bum 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 goal. Bum 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 goal. And I'm like, oh, here you go. Well, so what happened in that game, this is how weird it is, this coach from Campbell University in North Carolina had come to watch this Rush team, the goalkeeper, and some other girls from the other team, right? So she came to watch this and she was watching the goalkeeper. Well, Alexa schooled this goalkeeper in this game, just like torches her. Boom, goal, goal, goal. So before you know it, this college coach is now going, who's that girl? This is literally, this is exactly what happened. The Campbell were not even on our radar. They were like, who's that girl? So she comes out the next game. They approach me. And they go, we're going to come to our next game. We're going to come to our next game to watch. And I'm like, what? Who are you? And I'm like, and then we had Division Three schools talking to us, two schools talking to me. And I'm like, yeah, okay, she'll be playing the next game at this, whatever, this field. Oh, yeah, we'll be there. We'll be there. Well, her knee was playing her up. And so coach didn't start her. So all of a sudden, all these coaches literally were like, well, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? Where is she? So I'm looking over at her and I'm like, how is it? I'm kind of going, how is it? And she's like, and I went, well, it's a choice. I said, but I don't want you to get wrecked. But if you feel okay, then you tell coach you're ready to go for a bit. It's up to you. So she sucked it up and says, yeah, I'm ready to go, coach. I can do a bit. So she goes on there, goal, goal. Coach takes her out. She's not hurt, so we're like, oh, this is heavenly. So the next thing you know, she gets offered these opportunities, and then Campbell University, the coach, she contacts us and she's like, I want to give her a full scholarship, everything. And that's Division One, you know. So we're like, right? She goes, yes, she can stay free of food, she's got housing, she's got everything. And this was last minute. And this was what I was saying to you about. I don't know if it's still there now, but having the opportunity to guest play with another club is another way around some of these things where you don't have to necessarily leave your club. If
Right.
you can get that good relationship where you can guest play with somebody and your coach is not threatened by that, then that's another way to give players the opportunity of the next level. Because she ended up going to Campbell University, had a fantastic 4 years, all fully paid for. She was SEC Player of the Year, I think 2 years in a row, top goal scorer. It was everything. The only thing she missed out on, this is, you'll laugh at this. There was a girl there that ended up playing in Europe. She'd left before Lexa started at college. She was there. Legend, goal scorer, and whatever. So she ended up playing professional. And so, what was the name? In France. So in the end, it was coming down to like these goals. And I'm like, and I was always checking up on them because again, it's goals. So I was checking up on where this girl's records were with the school. And came down to it that Alexa was pretty much two goals behind her from the having the school record. Two would have given her the school record. And so we're like, okay, all right. So I think it was parent night, seniors night. So it's pretty much last game. And so he comes down and she's playing and we're like, she's not. She was cruel. She was getting through, but she'd missed a couple of chances. And I'm just like, geez, come on now. Well, she eventually scores. So now we're going, okay, they're tied. And I'm just like going, come on now, you've got to get the record. You've just got to get this record for the school. And they play. Well, they get a penalty. And I'm like, sweet. She takes penalties. Doesn't miss them. She steps up and she missed the penalty.
Oh, no.
And we all just looked and like, okay. So nothing was said. She only scored the one goal, but she tied the girls' record. So we finished the games, hugs and flowers and all that stuff. And we're going to get something to eat. So we're driving and the grandparents came out the car. And the mom came out the car. They were going to get something. And she stayed in the car. And I stayed in the car. And so she's in the back and I was just sat there. And she just went, so you got something to say? And I said to her, what do you think I'm going to say? She's like, you're going to think I didn't play well and I didn't do this and I didn't do that. And did it. And I went to her, actually, no, I'm not going to say that. But I said to her, but you got to score that penalty. You have to score that penalty. It was for the record. You know, so it's like, then she ended up tying with her as the most goals in the school playing time. So, but she ended up doing that. And again, through tears, and there was a spell where most of that top team left for supposedly brighter things. And so we had a second team and she wanted to leave with the group. And I said, no, you're not leaving. Because again, it was my club. And she's like, well, yeah. I said, no, I'm not leaving. I says, because I think it would do you good to have to fight with this second group. You would have to fight with them. It's going to make you a better player all around that. It's not coming so easy because you haven't got all these better players around you, but you can actually pick up a lot more skills, life skills, leadership qualities, and you know, and step up, and you'll get a lot more from it. And you'll get the opportunities, like I say, to go and guest play with those things. So it's not the end of the world, because kids, when they get to that age, they think it's the end of the world. So, but if you know what the options are for them, guest playing opportunities and things like that, then I don't think it's, I'm not sure if it's still around to this day, that those opportunities. I think sometimes coaches are a bit more, they think they own the players, so that they're afraid to let those players have those chances, I think, more. And I've only been here 2 years and I've already sensed that kind of. But it was there for her, and it worked out to be the best thing. And again, she wasn't in that big market. She wasn't in that big market, but fortunately, because I had, was aware of what was out there and what was going on, again, as her dad, as the coach, it gave more opportunities to her, whereas other parents may not have so much awareness of those situations to be able to go ahead. But I think the important thing is for parents to be aware of things like that, that it's not always, you can be where you're at, but then you've got to look at it. Can I take on opportunities to play, maybe guest play with another group without it being some big political outcry? Because often those things, and I'll give you an example of that. I was at my first game 2 weeks ago. I went to watch the 12s. And there was a kid playing for the opponents, and he was, I think he was playing up. You could tell he was small, but he was really good. He was really, really good. And I'm like, this kid is special. And so I go over to the coaches and I went, hey, how old's that kid? And they go, oh, he's playing up. He's 2014 or something, playing 12. And I'm like, oh, he's special. And I was like, yeah, he's really, really good. I said, look, if ever you're looking for any playing opportunities, you know, guest playing opportunities, just let me know. So I'm sitting there watching the rest of the game, and the other coach comes over and goes off. How dare you come over here and talk about this player, and I've had him this amount of years. And I'm like, whoa, stop. I said, first and foremost, that wasn't the conversation. I wasn't taking your player. I was saying how good he was and letting him know that if you're looking for opportunities to guest play somewhere, then you can have it. Well, so there you look at that, and that's the opposite side of the spectrum of a coach And those parents probably will never know that there's an opportunity for their child to do something else. He can stay with his team, but to do something else. But rather than do that, he stands out there getting beat 8-9-0, and that's what he took from it. And so I was like, okay, I don't know what to say to you. But, you know, these things are not easy for parents, but fortunately for me, I coach my son and I coach my daughter. And even when, like I said, I called him when he was in professional and I called her coach, which is the best part.
And that went well.
So some of these parents were thinking, what? I would call her college coach. This is no lie. I would call her college coach and I would send her reports on the game. And I would tell her coach that's not good enough. You need to be doing this. And so at first she would listen to me at first, but then eventually she got really fed up of like, and she was like, Dennis. And I'm like, no, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to keep telling you until we get this right. Cause she's trying to still go on from here. And again, this coach, She was a great person. She took her. And I said, look, you took her, but I'm not having you taking her and then having her go backwards. You know, because she hadn't no coaching license. So I'm like looking at it and going, I'm not belittling you, but I can share this information with you and then you can go ahead and she knew it. There were a lot of times she would agree and she'd be like, yeah, but I've only got these players, so I can't do this. And I'm like, well, you got to work it out. Because she doesn't need to be going backwards.
Right.
And so this coach was like, but again, had I not been a coach with my experience and my licenses, she wouldn't have given me the time of day.
Right.
She would have definitely given me the same speech every parent got. You don't talk to the coaches. But I would sit there and watch their games, literally, and I'd give her a minute by minute play. I would write it up, and I would email it to her. And I'd be saying, you see, that girl there should have been playing that. She should have been doing this, and she should have been doing that. Most parents don't have that opportunity. So it was tough for me, but it was easy for me because I looked at it like, well, you're a coach, and I'm a coach. So right. And I have the same license you have. So. Well, I did it to them when it was, was it national trial? Yeah. So it was regionals, you know, regional trial to try to go on. And they were very, again, closed door. She was in there and it's like, they didn't pick her because she was younger. She was the top goal scorer and they didn't pick her because she was younger. And I'm like, well, why did you invite her? Because you knew what her age was when you invited her. Right. Well, we got to take them because it's their age. And then and I'm like, well, that was pointless. So I told them when I was there at the camp, I don't know what you're doing. And straight away, they were looking at me like, you know. And so I can see where a lot of parents, if they have some knowledge of the game, how they can get frustrated and how they can get themselves caught in a situation where they go and approach the coach, you know, I can totally empathize with them. But at the end of the day, for me, I just felt as though that's what I did. That was what I was doing for a living anyway. So I didn't suddenly go, oh, you're the coach, but you suck. It wasn't that. I'm just like going, if I feel there needs to be a conversation because I feel as though you are hindering my child, then I'm going to have that conversation with you. And it would be the same now. When I coach kids now, if I feel as though there's something that's hindering them, whether it's another parent or whether it's the way the team is playing in terms of a formation, I address it. I address it straight away. I let them know where I come from. And I have an open door policy too, but it's like within 24 hours. It's like, you don't talk to me there and then, because that's not ideal. You never know how anybody's feeling emotionally which parents don't realize. They just go, boom. And I never did that. I never went straight at somebody, straight at any game. But a lot of parents, what they don't realize is it's not so much that coaches don't want to talk to you. It's when.
I also think it's the when and how. And I feel like that's the difference. And I think that's the hard thing, is having that conversation with the coach and picking the right moment to pick your battles.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. But I feel like you talked about guest playing. I think you're right. I think being part of a club, doesn't matter what size it is, as long as there's age groups close to your kids' players' age. My son plays up a year, and he guest plays still within Solar, but he guest plays H.
Right.
And it's the only reason they're asking him is because the coach knows that he doesn't have to coach him. He knows what he's doing playing 7v7. He's playing 9v9 now, and he can give direction to the boys on the field and help them. But at the same time, it's like, it would be fun to watch him play his age at a high level, because we've played against 2014s that are playing 23 brackets that kicked his team's butt. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that's the thing. It's like finding the right home for your player and giving the chance for the coach to have that moment. It's like we're paying club level now. We could be playing academy level, but we're playing the select level pricing. But we're getting select pricing coaching also. And nothing against any other coach we've had or in the past or anything it may be. It is, you find the coach that's going to push your player. You're fortunate enough, you had the natural understanding because you went, you played, you coached, you had everything else behind you. And most parents, like you said, most parents don't have that opportunity.
No.
Hey everyone, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode with Dennis. He's one of my coaches I like talking to. I wish I could spend days talking to him. I think I say that about every guest, and it kind of undervalues that comment or devalues that comment. But a lot of these coaches I've ran into that actually truly have passion and love for this game that our kids love playing, get excited and have a fascinating story how they all got into it. Dennis is no different. I had him on because I love how he talked about raising his son and raising his daughter. The episode abruptly ends because there's the second part of it, and I try to keep him under 45 minutes, and this is over an hour and 15 minutes or so. But Dennis is a great guy to talk to, a great listen. If you're looking for advice and wisdom, I would say listen to his previous chats him and I had, and listen to this episode and the next one. And I think you're going to get a lot out of it. I did, and it really makes me evaluate how I am positioning my son for his future. So take time to truly digest what he has to say.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.